Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
Sorry, I got sniffles. Welcome to Off the Cut episode 80. Wow, already at 85. We're up in Toronto, and here in Ohio, today is known as Tuesday, October 10th, 2023. I know I'm throwing you for everybody for a spin here. You're like, whoa, this is a new intro. Hear me out here. And on this day in history, you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
The Green Suitors podcast, the worst woodworking podcast in our space, available on Apple and Spotify, first got accused of poaching blue whales in an attempt to actually have something interesting to talk about. So I think, what do you think about that in intro? Every week we have something we talk about each day in history of something that they got accused of in an attempt to have something interesting to talk about.
Oh, I see. I think what we should do is we should find a website that has atrocities that happen on every single day, and then we just sub in the Green Suitors podcast instead of, you know, instead of Timothy McVeigh, it becomes the Green Suitors podcast.
Atrocities of the day. Okay.
That might probably get pretty dark pretty quickly, but...
Yeah, is this like the United Nations something? I don't know. It's basically like crime of the day or something. I don't know.
Ooh, we could read one of those Florida Man news clippings and sub in Green Suitors instead.
With the Florida Man thing? I forgot about this. This is like... Yeah.
So no, in
Florida man brutally beat shark with a hammer on the beach.
Yeah. So today, the Green Suitors podcast brutally beat a shark with a hammer on the beach.
Yeah, it's not bad. Because we discussed last week, we're like, the food of the day, it's funny, it's good, but the website's trash. It like is like breakfast. You're like, that's not a food. It's
it's like vodka.
Yeah, which, you know, there's some people out there where alcohol could be a food of the day, but
there's certainly calories in alcohol.
Yeah. That's wild though. But yeah, they first got accused of poaching blue whales.
But now, is there an inside joke that I'm not getting here, or is it
not at all?
Is there such a thing as a blue whale?
Dude, are you kidding me?
I don't know. Yeah. What's a blue whale? Okay, yeah, I guess so. I know.
That's the show whales. Title there. The one where they learn about blue whales. You've never heard of a blue whale.
Look, I know sperm whales because it's funny. I know humpback whales because it's also kind of funny. Yeah. And then I know killer whales because it's kind of badass. And that's the extent of my whale knowledge.
The blue whale is the biggest animal on the earth.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good title to have.
Like 150 feet long or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at... Oh, yeah. It's like...
Maximum confirmed length of 98 feet. Or 229.9 meters for those of you up north.
3 to 4 school buses long. That's pretty crazy. Have you ever seen a whale in real life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It's something. When you see one in real life, you're like, oh, okay. You can see... You can see photos all day long, and it doesn't do it justice. And you see one in real life, you're like, whoa, that is a big animal. It doesn't even really make sense until you see one in person.
So, and the thing is, like, we've all seen fish. We've seen, probably some of us have seen alligators or whatever, and you're like, damn, that thing's big. You've seen, buffalo, maybe an elephant. And, like, how long is an elephant, like? 15
feet maybe.
Yeah, I was gonna say like 15 feet maybe.
I've seen an elephant in real life too. I was motorcycling through Vietnam and just on the side of the road, chained up, elephant. My buddy's like pulled over and like walked right up to this elephant. Developing countries are wild, man. You're looking at me like a crazy. But it was, you know how on the highway you'll just be driving down and on the side of the road there'll be a blueberry stand or a honey stand where your mom likes to stop?
Yeah.
Oh, it was basically that, but there was a completely unattended elephant that was chained up.
Okay. Like, did it belong to somebody? Did it have, like, a collar on it?
I think, well, it was chained up, so it didn't have a collar, but it had, like, a little ankle shackle or whatever.
So you put, like, $5 in the tip jar and you can ride around the
poles? I mean, I think that is probably what the idea was, but there was nobody around attending to the elephant. It was just kind of there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Elephants, it's a large creature. What is this rope chain? Like, is it, you really think that the elephant couldn't just be like, I'm out of here?
No, I think it totally could. It's one of those things where I think they train it from a very young age.
Oh.
They put the shackle on it when it's a baby, and when it's a baby, it has no hope of breaking free. And it just assumes that that's the case as it gets older and older and bigger and more powerful.
What do they call that? The learned helplessness?
I think so.
That's the one where they, like, in like the 50s or whatever, they like shock dogs and found that eventually the dogs would just give up or something like that?
Sounds right. Scientists are evil.
Yeah, yeah. There's some interesting experiments that you could do that are just in moral gray areas, right?
I don't know if shocking dogs that don't give up is a moral breaker, but
would you say?
Yes, I take your meaning. I take your meaning.
It's just, that's probably a no-go area.
Yeah, for me personally, that's off limits. But
we should make a disclaimer that
this week you're shocking him.
Literally shock dogs,
shock dogs, and shackle elephants.
I got to write these down. Those are good. Those are good. Well, you know who doesn't shock dogs, shackle elephants, and knows about blue whales?
Our patrons.
Our newest patron. This week, new patron, Milton Woodworking.
Milton Woodworking. Now, Milton, you need to write in and tell us. Is Milton your first name, last name, the area you're from, or something else?
I assume Milton was the first name and Woodworking is their last name.
Oh, proper.
Which
name.
Is a strong name.
I once had somebody ask me if Builds was my last name.
You're kidding me.
I mean, it's kind of a fair question.
That's fair. I mean, you don't actively publicize your last name to people.
Yeah.
Secret. Yeah, because a lot of people, like Scott Walsh or whatever, like their name is their name.
Spensley Design Co.
Yeah, my last name is Design Co.
Yeah.
Always has been.
I thought your last name was Co and your middle name was Design.
Mr. Co. You imagine if I had somebody come up to me, they're like, excuse me, Mr. Co, it is a pleasure to meet you. I'd be like, who the hell are you talking to?
Your name legally changed.
Oh, that would be funny. Man, that would be funny. I want it to be like Ostrich or something like that. That'd be a pretty good last name.
Ostrich's not bad. I've never seen an ostrich in real life.
No?
No, I think I've seen an emu, but yeah, never an ostrich.
I don't know. Well, Milton, let us know. Hopefully we can refer to you as Mr. Woodworking or Mrs. Woodworking, because that'd be a wicked last name. But the other people who don't shock dogs or shackle elephants are top tier patrons. Returning this week and every week, we've got Christopher Johnson. Josh at Freedom Workshop, which I believe he's in the chat tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Brooke Appler, yeah. Grizzly Bear Woodworks. Dadu. Dadu's in the chat, right?
Yep.
Luke sure Schmidt is in the chat. Corey Duvall, Jason Price at Priceless Pro Designs, Scott Eastman, EC's Woodshop, and of course, the Power Cocker, formerly known as Wes.
Woo.
So, Zach, tell the people why they want to join Patreon.
Well, first of all, you unlock the after show, which is a whole other podcast that we do after this. You know, originally we said they were going to be 30 minutes, 45 minutes. Most of the time,
you're talking like 15, 20, and now it's like an hour.
Yeah, I think originally we were. Yeah. Now they're basically a whole other podcast onto themselves. What else do you get? You get access to the Discord server. You get access to the Patreon questions? Page. Where we, yeah. Oh, yeah. Questions. Thank you for helping me. You're like the person behind me in math class, like slowly whispering answers into my ear when you can see me struggling.
It's the quadratic equation. I don't remember what that is.
See, I'm a little confused because we've been trying to rework our Patreon rewards lately.
And we're almost there.
I think we're probably going to be ready to announce them next week, did we say?
Yeah, I think next week will probably work.
Yeah. So
we got some exciting news.
Look out for that. We're going to shake things up. We're going to change the tiers a little bit, offer some different rewards, keep things interesting, keep it fresh for the people who support this podcast.
Ooh, and I did want to address something real quick. I had a listener reach out today from the UK.
Mm.
And if you're familiar with the UK, they started this thing, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago, called VAT or value added tax.
Yeah.
Which is basically they pay sales tax and they have to pay another tax on top of it, which just absolutely bones people in the UK, right?
Mm.
They reached out and were like, hey, you know, I want to become a patron, but it's like a bananas value added tax on that. So
really,
I think that once we do some of the changes we're talking about, it will actually get rid of that value added tax.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Why is that?
It has to do with like physical. So I guess we're going to potentially spoil one of the things if people want to read between the lines. By offering physical goods,
gotcha,
you have to pay a value added tax. If it's all digital, my understanding and my research on it is that you don't have a value added tax, but it's like an additional like 25%.
Woo.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Which I get is a barrier for some people, that especially if they want to support us. Like, so
totally.
Definitely taking that into consideration. So,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel even better about our choice now. Maybe it'll end up actually being cheaper for a significant number of people.
Yeah. Cause I'm pretty sure the value added tax is not just in the UK.
I think it's worldwide.
I think you're right.
I could be wrong about that. Maybe some Europeans can chime in and, back me up or correct me, but I think that might be the case.
Yeah, yeah. But the main benefit is the after show, which we hang out, answer questions, and talk about things that we can't talk about. And I've got something this week that I'll give you a little tease. Zach and Derek don't even know about this.
Yeah, well, you know, teasing us in the pre-show.
That I had talking to Jay Katz earlier in the week for a couple hours on the phone, and we were talking about some stuff. And I had just asked him a couple questions, and then we went down this rabbit hole of, we need to work together on this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just leave it there. Okay. I know you guys don't even know about it, and it's something that I'm super excited about, something that I've always wanted to do, and I'm really pumped for it. So we'll talk about that in the after show, but that's all I'm going to say right now.
Is it dressing up like a giant baby? Because I know you wanted to do that for a while.
We're going to talk about it in the after show.
Okay. All right.
Which, by the way, shout out to everybody on the live stream tonight. We got a good crowd on the live stream tonight.
Yeah, it's busier than usual.
Yeah.
We got Woodcraft by Suman here.
we got all kinds of people in there. Suman's in there. We got tons of patrons. We got tons of regulars. We're excited to have everybody. And we got some good... Yeah. Green Suitors burns, like this one from Dadu. Green Suitors are like pineapple on a pizza. Some people love them, but any decent human wouldn't touch it with a 100-foot stick. I couldn't agree more.
Oh, that's funny. Luke's got one there, too.
All right, what's Luke's?
Green Suitors don't have to pay that tax because there's no value added.
Got him. Well, with that... Zach, what have you been up to? Anything exciting going on?
So I just finished a new set of speakers yesterday, and I brought them home, and I'm getting them all set up. So you know how most people, they have like a surround sound set up? They'll have two front two yeah. front speakers, a center speaker,
yep.
and two rear speakers, and then a subwoofer.
Known as a 5.1.
5.1. What I have just created is a 5.1.2 setup.
Oh.
So I made two speakers that are aimed upwards at an angle, and they reflect sound off your ceiling and then back down onto you. So you can hear, if you're watching a movie, if a helicopter flies over your yeah. head.
Or the boogeyman.
Or the boogeyman. Well, I mean, really, any large object, creature, or monster above
blue
your head.
Whale.
Or a blue whale, yeah.
So, correct me, I'm probably wrong. Mm-hmm. I thought that when you added more speakers, like, so if you added another subwoofer, it'd become a 5 instead of a 5.1, because the 1 mm-hmm. refers to the subwoofer, but now be a 5.2 if you had yes. two subwoofers, right?
Yes.
So, I thought if you added additional surround speakers that it would go from a 5.1 to a 6.1 to a 7.1.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's the naming convention was not really established very particularly well. So you could have a 7.1 setup, but typically that would denote then having
like the side speakers or whatever.
Yeah. Side speakers, or sometimes they change the rear one so that they're like, there's a set that's really far behind you and then two off to the side. So generally speaking, that first number denotes speakers that are approximately at the same height. And then the second number is the number of subwoofers. And then that last number is the number of height channels that you have, or the number of, yeah, height speakers that you have.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like the first number is how many speakers are on, let's call it the equator of the
yes,
Earth.
Yes, exactly.
And then the second number would be the subwoofers. The third number would be the number of speakers that are off of the equator.
Exactly.
I guess it's not the greatest analogy.
But if you could imagine a plane above the rest of the speakers, that so in a lot of theater, if you go to a movie theater, all of their that third that third digit, the yeah, point yeah. two in my case, those will usually be in-ceiling speakers.
Oh.
But if, I mean, if anybody's ever installed in-ceiling speakers before, they know it's a royal pain in the ass. You have to right. drill holes. You have to pull wires.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very invasive thing. So
it's clean, though.
It is very clean. It is very clean. But, you know, if you move, it's a hassle to then take them out. What do? Do you leave them in there? Do you patch That's the holes? So these ones that I designed that bounce off the ceiling are actually pretty well supported. Like, it's a pretty well understood thing, and it works. I mean, I haven't done the full testing on them yet, but what I've done so far, it's pretty impressive how well it works.
So
you have to design the speakers specifically for it too.
Okay. Okay. So I want to know build details, but I have to ask a question first.
Sure.
How does Sophie feel about adding more and more tech into the living room? Does it piss her off, or does she not care?
She doesn't care until it stops working.
Okay.
You know what I mean? When she has to call me and she's like, "Where? What's the remote combination that I have to press when the sound system starts glitching out and I can't play my show?"
That's
you
fair.
Just want to watch Hallmark.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's Hallmark season, baby.
Although I will say adding more speakers usually doesn't add any more complexity to it. It's all handled by the AV receiver, or the amp. So
that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
The universal remote?
Yeah. So I actually have it set up such that I only use the remote that came with the TV.
So it's easy for her, as long as everything works.
Yeah. I don't have one of those monstrosities where you have 8 remotes that are taped together into Megatron.
the dad command console remote.
Exactly. I was very clear from the outset of the project that I wanted to have just a single remote to control everything.
So tell me, how did we go about building this? What did we use plexiglass? We use wood? What sort of tech did you throw into this? Like,
for this one, I just used wood. And it's a pretty simple design. It's basically a box with you know, you have a crossover inside it. That's the circuit that sorts out high frequency sounds from low frequency sounds.
Yeah.
You have a front and a rear baffle. Those are just pieces of MDF. The front one has holes cut in it for the speaker drivers. And then the back one has a port and the plate, basically, where you screw in your input and output cable.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's very simple. It's basically a miter box.
Yeah, yeah.
With a front MDF panel and a rear MDF panel. So not overly sophisticated in terms of the construction. However, these are a little different than your normal set of speakers, because a normal set of speakers, you have the drivers right at the very face of the cabinet.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Right? You want to have them on the furthest out surface, and you don't want to have anything in front of them because that'll disrupt the sound waves.
Right.
On these ones, I made the speakers almost like a cannon. They're recessed into the front of the box, and then there's a inch and a half, or maybe it's 2-inch projection off the front of the speaker cabinet of solid wood, and then on the inside, it's lined with a sound deadening material.
Huh.
Okay. So the idea is to focus the sound beam coming off of the front of the speaker in order to really sell that effect once you bounce it off the ceiling. Because if it's just a speaker that's projected wide, it's just going to seem like a speaker that's a little higher than the rest of them. But if you can project the sound, if you can form a beam of sound, if you will, then you can actually really sell the effect of it coming from directly above you as it bounces off the ceiling.
That totally makes sense. So is it kind of the idea in reverse, like for people who've watched like football, where they have the person on the sidelines that has the shotgun microphone with like the big bowl around it?
Yes.
And so they can basically aim
where
they're getting the sound from, but instead of being a microphone, it's a speaker in this case, right? So you're aiming where the sound goes, as opposed to just letting it naturally spread out.
Precisely.
I never even thought about that.
Yeah. A lot of high-end soundbars, like if you go get like a nice Samsung soundbar or something like that, it'll have two speakers that fire upwards as well. Obviously, this one that I made is much more powerful and theoretically should be better. But yeah, it's interesting. And then, so as part of the calibration process, I built the speakers, installed them, and then I went around the room with a microphone that's attached to my AV receiver, and it plays test noises
in order to
balance all of the individual speakers. So if the microphone, if your seating area is a little closer to one speaker than another, it'll make the one that's closer a little quieter and then the one that's further away a little louder in order to compensate. And it also analyzes the entire room and applies a correction based on the entire room.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
So with those, like you're saying those sound bars, high-end sound bars have the speakers that directly like bounce off the ceiling and are very directional. Mm-hmm. Is that the same way that I know you can also get some of these sound bars that say they do like a not true surround sound, but they're like, we can give you a virtualized surround sound with only one speaker. Is that the same idea?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And when they have, well, I shouldn't say, I think when they say they have a virtualized 5.1 setup, there actually is 5 speakers in there.
Hmm.
And what they're doing is they're just firing the sound channels off in different directions. And then it's listening to how long it takes those sound waves to come back. Hmm. So it's essentially mapping your room and then trying to, as much as they can without, obviously the angle is fixed, but you can play with the timing between channels in order to create a virtualized surround sound effect.
Interesting. Interesting.
And from everything I've read, it's surprisingly effective when it's done well.
Okay. Yeah. So in order for the new speakers that you're making to blend in to the sounds, the acoustics of your previous speakers, did you purchase like the same brand of drivers?
Yeah.
Right.
So all of the components in my height speakers are the same as in all of the other. So they should, all the other speakers in my setup, they all come from one company.
Okay.
They're all, the setups themselves are all designed by one guy. So they should all sound very similar, though you could mix and match. It's not nearly as big of a deal to mix and match when you have it connected to like a smart receiver that does all that analytics.
All the analytics.
Yeah. You could mix and match a bunch of different types of speakers, but you get better results if they're all the same.
That makes sense. Have you tested them yet?
Not really. That is so. I'm kind of playing with it in my hand here, but I have this little 3D printed adjustable angle bracket that I made. So one thing I want to do, and I'm going to do it tomorrow, is go down there and I'm going to play. So the speakers are meant to sit at the front of my surround sound setup. So I'm going to see, does 10 degrees sound better? Does 15 degrees sound better? Does 20 degrees sound better? So I'm going to adjust a bunch of different angles and see. So that's the testing I have to do tomorrow. But I didn't get there to it today. I was too busy printing the actual brackets.
But see, I think a lot of people hear that and they're like, oh man, that sounds tedious as hell. But because it's something that you're really interested in, you're like, this is fun. Like, I'm excited to test this and like really dial it in and be like, oh man, that's perfect setup right there, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Maybe the angle doesn't even matter. It's all going to be part of the fun experimentation of the video.
Right. Derek, I thought I saw a question come in. Somebody asked about the construction of the speakers. Did I miss one?
Willard was asking what type of dampening material you use.
Let me look it up. It's like a fibrous, I'm trying to think. Let's see. It's not foam. It's more of like a fibrous, like a wood product almost. Let's see.
Oh, was it asbestos?
Yes, it's asbestos.
Only the Green Suitors podcast would make speakers out of asbestos.
I'm frantically going through my Amazon orders trying to find it. Here we go. So they're acoustic panels. Are they felt? High density sound dampening panels. I'm trying to see what they're actually made out of.
Is it some BS no name brand that was cheap on Amazon, or did you spring for the premium stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of BS-y. Cheap Amazon.
No,
like, it's good.
No judgment here, man.
No. So
that's the job.
It's high density polyfiber panels.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Jude has an insult to throw in. Ooh. All of these speakers and the Green Series podcast still sounds like trash.
Yeah, that's true. I've never actually tried listening to the Green Suitors through my downstairs sound system, just through headphones.
No. You'll have to go to therapy if you do.
Hey, you know,
so are the speakers done?
Yeah, they're done. The only thing I have to do is go down there and make, like, install my little variable angle gauge things on them. Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. Then it's on to the next thing. And I don't know what that is yet.
You're going to say something before I cut you off.
No, I can't remember what it was. So it can't have been that important.
Yeah. Fair enough. But I'm still working on that damn epoxy chessboard. Dude.
Really? I thought you had it basically sorted last week. You said you had all the pieces glued to the board, right?
Yeah. Okay. So the chessboard is made. But then it's like, okay, now everything's all together. Now I have to flood coat it with epoxy, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But the problem is you do that, and then when you flood coat it, the wood still has air in it. So it's starting to release small little bubbles. So you have to do like a really thin coat. At the whole time, you're like blasting it with the heat gun to pop all the bubbles, but you're still not going to get all of it.
Yeah.
So then you have to wait like 2 or 3 days for it to cure. Then you go sand it, not all of it off, but the majority of it off. Then you pour another coat, and you're like, okay, now I have less bubbles. I have to do that. I've had to do like 4 or 5 coats. Obviously, I'm not putting that in the video because nobody's going to want to watch that part.
Isn't that the worst part about making a YouTube video? You're like, this is literally taking me 5 days to do this part of the project. And I know it's going to be condensed down into like 1 10-minute segment where you're like, I sanded a bunch of times and applied a bunch of coats. And it's like, that's all. That's all your labor gets you.
Right. And so I did that on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have to flip it over and do it at the top because I can't do both coats at the same time.
Yeah. Is there a better way to do this? Like, what about if you did a coat of Rubio just to seal the pores? And then, I mean, the place to experiment was on the bottom. So
right.
That ship has kind of sailed to some degree.
And that's what I kind of got to thinking. I'm like, well, one, easiest solution. Stop working with massive amounts of epoxy. It's obnoxious. Huge pain in the ass.
It is kind of fun, though. But it's both fun and a pain in the ass. I know what you're saying.
Especially clear epoxy. Tinted clear epoxy is fine. Because yeah. if there are air bubbles inside of black epoxy, no one sees it.
Yeah. Clear epoxy is playing on hard mode.
Yeah. Sure. No doubt. Especially in like a setup like mine where like I open the garage door and it's just like puffs of clouds of dust. And I'm like, oh my God.
The nice thing about dust, at least, is even if it gets an epoxy, usually it floats to the surface. So you can just sand it out afterwards, but not always.
So that's my question is I keep flood coating it with epoxy, whatever. Mm-hmm. Get all the air bubbles out. That top layer isn't going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfectly flat. So do I just sand it and then like wax the top of it so it's shiny?
Oh, like what do you mean? The top layer of the epoxy is never going to be perfect?
I don't think so. Or do I just be like, it's good enough? Good enough for YouTube.
Well, good enough for YouTube is always the way. But yeah. you can sand and buff and go nuts with it, right?
I'm gonna buff it. Are you kidding?
Okay.
If I don't have the material already in the garage, I'm not doing it.
Well, yeah. What is a lot of people like to do? What's that Poly-X finish? It's a hard wax, but it's one part.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Osmo stuff.
Osmo. A lot of people like to put Osmo over epoxy. So that's what I did. Remember when I made that epoxy clear wireless charger?
Huh. Yeah.
It was a while ago. But basically, I wanted it to be as clear as possible. So what I did was I took the piece, I sanded it, I wet sanded it all the way up to 2000 grit.
Okay.
And then I did the Osmo over the top of it. And it worked pretty well.
Did it yellow it?
No. No.
Okay. I think that's what I might do is just sand it and then, I don't know.
Because the Osmo or whatever finish you use will fill in all those last little micro scratches.
Right.
And really get it back to looking quite clear.
Because I don't think there's any way that I'm ever going to get the epoxy perfect because as I flood coat it on the top, then on the bottom, it's going to get little drip bubbles.
Little drippies, yeah.
So I think what I'm going to have to do is just do a bunch of flood coats, let it all cure, then go and like sand it smooth and flat, and then add some sort of finish on top of it.
Yeah. Well, what about the Total Boat Halcyon? Is that not made to go over top of epoxy?
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I would honestly talk like you know people at Total Boat, right?
Yeah, I'll just email Kristen and just ask her.
Yeah. So I was working on my my Nintendo 64 project.
Okay.
And I printed it in clear resin.
Yeah.
And what I did was I took it was very similar to epoxy when it was done. It was just like a hazy kind of mess.
Yeah,
I went and I sanded it. I wet sanded it. And then I got some acrylic spray paint and sprayed the acrylic spray paint over it. And that really helped bring the clearness back to it. It's still not perfect, but it's a lot better than it was.
So it's just like a clear coat of acrylic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. That's, I'm going to do that. Cause I could spray a couple super light coats.
Exactly. It was like $8 cans at Lowe's and I just went to town. It made it look a million times better.
What do you think the durability, like, is it going to adhere well to the epoxy?
Yeah, so, I don't know about epoxy. That's a good question. The plastic, I talked to the company that makes the plastic, and they said, oh, yeah, acrylic is one of the best things in terms of adherence. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, this plastic is pretty similar to epoxy, so I wouldn't be surprised if it works well.
Yeah. Ugh, I just feel like I put so much time into this. And this is what I talk about with all these projects. Like, what gets me into the project is this, like, creative endeavor idea. And then once I'm like, okay, yeah, I can combine wood and epoxy into a chessboard. And I'm like, oh, now I just have to finish. I just don't care anymore. I'm over it.
Yeah, this happens to me on basically every project I do. Somewhere around the 80% mark, you're just over it.
Right.
You're like, I proved to myself that I could do it, and now I'm just spending time, like, it's so hard to explain. You know that it could be done, but you just have to spend the next 48 hours doing it. And it's the big question in your mind of like, can it be accomplished or not, is that's gone. Now you're just, all you're left with is execution.
Right.
And it's hard.
So you're like me, Zach, where the process and the creative, like the creative, getting the creative idea out is more interesting to you than the finished product. The finished product has a utility, but you're like, I did it because I was interested in building this or whatever, right?
I'll let you, Derek, and the listeners at home in on a little secret about the finish on these speakers that I just did.
All right.
Wait. Hold on. Damn it. Okay. No. Right.
Sorry. Right. I stepped on your joke.
Hold on. Hold on. Stay for it. Hold on. All right. Tell us.
The finish is not that good. I applied a polyurethane finish on it that I guess had been sitting in the cabinet for too long. And I got all these tiny little bubbles on it, and they dried into it, and it's got like this like very like, you just feel all these little bubbles on the surface of it even when it's dried. And I was in the shop, it was Sunday, it was like 5 o'clock, and I was thinking to myself, do I sand this finish down and do it again, or do I just accept the fact that there's these little bubbles on it? It's speakers, so I'm never going to touch these things. They're just going to sit on the other side of the room. I never have to look at them close up. And
just, it's going to kill you, though.
It's going to kill me, but you know what? I made the decision to just, I was like, it'll be okay. I'll just go with it.
You know what this means? Because I want to
move on to the next thing.
You want to move on. But what this means is you're not going to show any tight shots of this on YouTube.
Probably not. Or I'll just play with the lighting a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now you don't want to catch a bad reflection, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't have any like raking angles where the light is coming in from the side. It'll all be very front lit to minimize any imperfections.
That's the thing. Like, I enjoy making all, like, don't get me wrong, I love doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's these teeny tiny intricacies that no one's ever going to see. No one's seeing me spending 2 weeks coating this epoxy chessboard with more epoxy. Because I put a coat and then I have to wait 2 or 3 days before I can sand it, or else it just turns into this like gummy eraser mess.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wait. And now I can't do anything else in the garage right now. And it's cold, so now it's going to take even longer for the epoxy to cure.
Yeah. You're almost better off waiting till it gets decently hard and then bringing it inside where it can.
I know.
Yep, maybe.
I know. I'm over it.
But the project is only part of the process, right? Because we also like making videos.
Right.
So a lot of the time I'm like, okay, I'm ready to just be done with the building part and get on to the editing part. The VO part, like trying to create the best possible narrative around this project.
Or the part that makes you money.
Or the part that makes you money. Yeah, you're eager to get paid too, right? Yeah.
It's like driving to work every day and then not doing anything and never collecting a paycheck. At some point, you're like,
yeah,
I got to get this paycheck.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true as well.
In a project that you're just sinking like hundreds and hundreds or thousands of dollars into, and you're like, oh my God, I really hope this video takes off or I'm screwed.
I know. I have an idea for a video that I'm thinking conservatively. The budget for everything I would need in terms of materials is probably like $4,000 to $5,000. And I'm like,
yeah, but Zach, you're on YouTube. You get everything for free. You've never paid for materials or anything before in your life. Everything is free.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Well, actually, I should talk to our agent and see if he can maybe get me some of the materials for free. Derek, don't chop this into a short, because what I'm thinking to do is I want to make a really high powered PC for Bryson.
Ooh.
And I just want to, at the end of the video, I just want to give it to him.
Ooh.
But I'm like, before we got on the air today, I was trying to price out how much it would be. And just in terms of like computer parts, it was $2,500, not to include like the woodworking components. I was thinking, I was like, oh, I probably want to water cool it too. So that's another $1,000.
Yeah. Reach out to Mark because I know Johnny Brook from Crafted Workshop has done PC sponsors with Ryzen, I think.
Ooh, okay.
So Mark might have a connection for you there.
Okay. Very good tip. Thank you.
I'm here for you.
I was thinking I might do that as my Christmas special because I like to do like a little, you know, little feel good video for my Christmas ones. So.
I like that. I like that. Not giving away free tools again this year?
I don't know. That was
didn't painful. Go as well as you thought.
Didn't go as well as I thought. It did pretty well. You know, like I think I got 100,000 views on the video or something like that. So good. Not bad. Yeah. But it was considerably harder than I thought it would be.
Right. And because we've talked about this, both you and I are introverted people. So like going out in public and being like, hey, excuse me, can I give you free tools? And somebody's like, F off, leave me alone. You're like, okay, I'm so sorry. I don't want to talk to you. Bye.
Yeah.
Why don't we just scrap this video and move on? I don't want to be out in public with a camera and a microphone. Like,
exactly. Exactly.
I was pitching some brand sponsor stuff today, some short form stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, afterwards, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just pitched me like using some of the stuff out in public, which means I'm going to have to like set up a camera in public. I'm like, oh no, what did I do to myself?
I get myself into that all the time. I'll write out a pitch or an idea for a video, and then I'll be like, oh no, wait. Did I just say that I would go out in public and talk to strangers? That's insane. I can't do that.
You're gonna go film yourself in a grocery store and you're like, oh god, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I even get self-conscious like if I like go into like Home Depot or woodworking store and get like a clip of me like grabbing something off the shelf. I'm like, it makes me just like curl up on the inside.
I once went to a Lowe's and I wanted to get a quick clip with my phone of their spray paint wall. And it was like the quickest thing. Like I just sat there like this and took a very quick clip. And then I look, and at the end of the aisle, there's a Lowe's employee just staring at me like, what the hell are you doing?
Right, right. Then they're like, do you need help finding something? It's like, I know more than you.
It's like, no, I just need a B-roll clip. See ya. And then I skulked out of there with my tail between my legs.
Yeah. Could you imagine running a YouTube channel where you're like a vlogger and like have to have a camera in the public? Oh, no.
I watched somebody's YouTube video where they were a vlogger and they were vlogging in public and they were talking about the process of getting over that feeling. Yeah. And his thing was like, it's 2023. If somebody sees you talking to a camera in public, they get it. You're doing a vlog. Yeah. And even knowing that, it's still weird.
Even as people who get paid to make content, if I saw somebody talking to their camera in public, I'd be like, what an asshole. Like, I know what you're doing, but I'm like, get it.
Yeah, it's true. You should do that in the privacy of your own garage.
Did you see Malecki this week?
No.
John Malecki?
Yeah, I watched. Yeah. That video popped up the other day. He was doing something.
Like all day.
Yeah. He went to like Home Depot parking lots.
Yeah.
And was like, I'll give you $100 if you can read this tape measure. And so many people just told him to F off.
Nope.
Wow. Well.
Yeah.
I mean, based on my own experience, I can understand why that would happen to him.
See, I'd be the person that would tell him to F off. Because I would assume it's like, hey, if you read this tape measure, I'll give you $100. You're like, all right, yeah, I'm going to read it. And then you're going to be like, so... I've been trying to reach you about your car's extended warranty. like one of those things, right?
Yeah. I did have a few people when I was giving away the tools that were like suspicious. Like I would even put the tool in their hand. They'd be like, what's the catch? Is there just bricks inside this box? I'm like, no, there's a tool in there. Like, it's Merry Christmas. And they'd be like, yeah, but come on. Like, honestly, what's the catch?
So I wonder if in that case you're like, hey, I'm here on behalf of DeWalt. We just wanted to like give out tools to people, no catch. Like if you said something like that, but then you'd have to have like a DeWalt shirt and like
something like that, right? Yeah.
I think that would potentially make it run smoother.
Yeah, true.
We had like a DeWalt sign next to you, or like a DeWalt shirt, and they were like, "Hey, I'm with DeWalt. We just wanted to, you know, pair people up with gifts. No catch. Just here you go."
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you had given me that prompt before I went out to the Home Depot parking lot, that would have been great. But
it's one of those things you don't know till you fail.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, before we started the show tonight, while we were doing some of our back end, surprise, surprise, people, when we press play, that's not just like, boom, we log on and we just start talking. We have some BS, you know, 10, 15 minutes before we actually push record. Mm-hmm. And I joined on time. I'll have everybody in the live chat. No, it was 6:59 that I joined. But you guys, Derek and Zach, you guys were already talking about some stuff. So bring everybody up to speed what we're talking about, because I thought it would be good content for us to talk about in the main show.
Yeah, so when I first joined our little live stream chat, I noticed that Derek had his latest YouTube video. Well, is this... I know you've made them in the past. Is this considered... Do you want to call this your first YouTube video?
I call this my my soft reboot.
Your soft reboot soft video. Launch. Okay. So he had his YouTube studio pulled up, and I could see his thumbnail. I could see his video description. And, you know, being the jerk that I am, I just started giving him a bunch of unsolicited advice about how he could do it better.
Right. Helpful.
Helpful. trying to be helpful. So... Yeah, I think that's kind of the general premise. So, Derek, with your permission, can Eric and I try and brainstorm? And you too, obviously. Like, let's collaborate on this a little bit.
Well, we'll do the new section where two old YouTubers help a new YouTuber.
Sure,
yeah.
So
we're old YouTubers now, Eric.
Yeah, I know. The first question
from the guy that's older than both of y'all.
Hey, this is what it is. Experience, maybe. I wouldn't even say better, just we've done it a little longer. So the first thing, when you put out a video, we made the video, we're the video's done, we're not going to talk about editing the video, anything like that.
Yeah,
so you upload it into YouTube. The first thing it asked you is, what do you want to title this video? So Derek, what did you title the video?
So originally, before the constructive feedback, it was titled, the title was Dart Board Cabinet Doors Detail Inlay.
Okay.
I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I think
I forget who said it, but yeah, one of y'all made an observation, and I'll let you share there.
So I think the first thing we said to Derek was get rid of the dartboard cabinet.
Yeah.
Part of the title, because anybody who's looking at it, looking for a YouTube video to watch, if they're not thinking about building a dartboard cabinet, or they're not even remotely interested in building a dartboard cabinet, they're probably going to skip that video. And I imagine the amount of people out there looking to build dartboard cabinets is relatively small compared to just general woodworking. And you said the main thrust of the video is actually about this inlay detail that you have in the doors, right? Yes.
Yeah, I don't even show building the box at all.
Right, which I think is a much more general thing that more people would be interested in. So my advice was to lean into the inlay aspect of things more than the dartboard. Get the dartboard out of there and focus on the broadest point of the video.
Which seems counterintuitive to popular, I would say, knowledge. Yeah. Or, you know, you're thinking... What do I title the video? Well, I should title the video exactly what the video is.
Because you want it to be search engine optimized.
And put as many words in there as possible to kind of shock you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Zach made a perfect comment. If I pull up YouTube and let's pretend, Derek, I don't know you. I don't know your brand. I don't know your channel, anything. If it says dartboard cabinet door inlay, I'm not watching it. Why? Because I don't want to build a dartboard cabinet.
Yeah.
And it could be the best video in the world. I'm out already.
And even less people are interested in building an inlaid door on a dartboard cabinet than are than are interested in building a dartboard cabinet. So you've even gone like a niche down from just people who want to build. So you,
and then stepping off that, I imagine anybody that would be interested in building a dartboard cabinet is going to kick open the video where I start out by saying, I'm not showing building the cabinet, just this inlay.
Ow.
Is immediately going to click off because it's not what they wanted.
Yes. Yep. Oh, dang. So now that all being said, I even wonder now if we should get away from the inlay thing so much. Is there a more general lesson that you could apply? So you said you've cut all these inlays by hand, right?
Yeah, hand routing, yeah.
Maybe it's something more even general, like, you know, I never knew how to, this is a bad example, but like, I can't believe more
people. Starts though.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
The first like, time I did it too.
Yeah. I can't believe more people don't know this about using the router or something like that.
I never thought a router could do this.
Yes, there we go. So now we're even away from inlaying. We're just now we've broadened our audience to people who own routers.
That might want to learn, oh, do I know this trick about a router? So during the video, do you make any sort of mention of like, you know, I thought this was going to be impossible, but as I kind of got started, like, it's really not too bad. Like, you know, you learn a bit, do this trick, do this trick. Like, are there any parts of the video where you kind of talk about that or mention something along the lines of like, I thought this was going to be more complicated than it was?
Not to that extent, or not in those way, not in the, those words. More, I touch on it's easier than it looks.
Perfect.
It's not that complicated. Yeah, you're using guides and jigging it and everything, and I guess kind of, but not really.
Yeah. So where we're kind of going with this is, yes, the video is how you did an inlay on a cabinet door.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. We get it.
Yeah. But that's not what
we want to. Exactly. What we're trying to do is grab the widest audience, get their attention, get their curiosity to want to watch your video.
Yeah.
How do you do that? You try to intrigue people. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's clickbait. Clickbait is not inherently negative. Mm-hmm. By you want clickbait. You want to title your video something that somebody is like, I have to watch Derek's video. Never heard of him. I have to watch it. And then once they're in the video, you want to deliver upon what you promised in the title. So
you want people to feel like they're missing out if they don't watch your video.
Right.
I was saying to Derek before the show, you want them to feel like there is some nugget of information contained in this video that is going to be important for them or will better their life in some way.
Right, right. So the video is about the inlay, but the entertainment or the learning that you're giving people is going to be the skills of this inlay. So how can you make that skill approachable to everyone? Well, it could be something along the lines of like, I never thought a router could do this.
Yeah, I was literally just thinking that exact same title in my head.
Right. And so anyone like Zach said that owns a router is going to think, okay, I have a router. Maybe I'm a pro. Maybe I'm a beginner. Maybe I'm an intermediate. Well, I want to know if I know this router skill. And so something like that, it draws all these people in.
They told me I couldn't do this without a CNC.
Another good option. And so there are always so many layers of potential different options because with that video title that Zach mentioned, now you're getting all these people that are like, I'm on the fence. Should I buy a CNC? Should I not? Because I want to do inlays. And they go, oh, well, Derek can do inlay work without a CNC, that's pretty damn cool. Maybe I don't need one now. Now I want to follow him and see what other kind of stuff he shows me that I can do without buying this, and this tool. So by titling it something like that, you're creating more longevity to somebody. They're coming for the video.
Yeah.
But they're going to stay to see what else you can provide them.
Okay.
And it might just be entertainment. There's nothing wrong with that.
Eric and I talk about this all the time. Most people are never going to recreate the projects that we make in our videos. It's a vanishingly small percentage of people. Most people are watching our videos for entertainment and general information.
Right.
They don't really care what the project is. No. They just don't want to see... But it's I don't know if it's ironic or it's counterintuitive in that some people will immediately discount watching a video if they aren't interested in the end product, in the thumbnail. You know what I mean? Like, some people will sit there and watch a whole video about how to build a coffee table if it's got a tidy, like, catchy title and thumbnail.
Yeah.
But if you just tell them, hey, I'm building a coffee table in this video, they'll be like, yeah, coffee tables are boring. I don't want to watch that.
Right. It sounds like what you were saying earlier about, you know, you've already answered the question in your chessboard video build about what, if you can do it or not, and all that's left is the 20% of finishing it out, which you already know how to do, so that's boring. You don't want to do it. You just want to skip over it.
Right.
Yeah.
The same thing could be said with the YouTube video. If you give it all away in the title, then who's going to want to watch it? Because there's no mystery anymore. There's nothing that they already know the answers.
Yeah. You can do a title thumbnail combination where it says, I built this, and then it's just a picture of the finished product. Only if the finished product is so unique and so interesting that people are naturally curious, like, how did he ever make that?
Yeah.
Right.
That is the only way I think that, like, the straightforward title thumbnail combination works.
Or if you have something like an example most of us know, Cam from Blacktail. He could have a title that's like, I built a $20,000 table. Somebody goes, what the hell?
Yeah.
What is a $20,000 table? I have to look at this.
Exactly. Yeah, the curiosity there is a lot of the time the dollar value.
Right, right.
You should, ideally, you should feel something when you look at a thumbnail. It can either, it can make you feel amazed. It can make you feel, in some cases, like, making people angry works too. If you say, if you make a title that says Festool Dominoes suck, I bet you would have, and just like a Festool Domino with an X through it, you would probably get a pretty decent click-through rate on that video. You might not have good viewer retention, but you probably get a good initial
people click. As long as you can deliver on that promise, that could be a good video.
Exactly, right? So that's,
So that's where we go with, we could go, and Derek, this is what we mean. I could spend days trying to figure out the title for a video. I don't just slap random ass words on it. Like, I truly think deep about all this stuff. It might look like all the titles are very nonchalant, but there's truly, there's a lot of thought that goes into it.
Yeah.
So you get the title, whatever we settle on. The next thing is the thumbnail. So the suggestion that I always tell everybody is, you're creating your thumbnails on, like, your laptop screen or your computer screen. And it's what, like, probably a 24, 27, 32 inch monitor.
48, baby.
Right. Fuck off, Zach. Oh, there's explicit. Explicit.
I heard that one.
What you need to do your thumbnail. And then, I kid you not, shrink your window down to about a 1-inch by 1-inch size. You're like thinking, like, what the hell? Shrink it down that small, and if you can't glean any information from the thumbnail, thumbnail, it sucks. Like, so I'm looking at your thumbnail right now through my screen, and it's about 1-inch by 1-inch. Yeah. I see a person's face, a red rectangle, which is the YouTube play button. I know that. And then I see, like, a brown thing and a green rectangle. It doesn't do anything for me. Like, I don't get any information from that. But if you make it big, I'm sure it's, like, kind of zoomed in on the inlays about what happened in the cabinet and stuff like that, which is awesome. But you can't see that when the thumbnail is really small. So, like, if it pops up on your phone, you know how teeny tiny that thumbnail is. that's where you want to be editing and looking at the thumbnail when it's that small.
Yeah. Okay. So like looking at your thumbnail right now, I notice you've got like your face. I'm kind of torn on the whole face thing. I know a lot of people say put your face in every thumbnail.
It doesn't work for me, but some people it crushes.
Yeah, it hasn't historically worked very well for me either. But yeah, some people it does crush. But in the top left corner, like there's a lot of kind of wasted space up there, and it's kind of distracting too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like zoom it in. A lot of time what I do is I go in Photoshop and I select the important things. So like in this case, I would select your face and I would select the cabinet and I would make those their own separate layers. Yeah. So you might have already actually even done this, right?
Oh, see, yeah, now we can see like that inlay looks nuts. That inlay looks wild.
Yeah, like that's the detail. Awesome. I think the detail of that inlay has to be you got to lean hard on that thumbnail.
Like, do you have an in-process shot that has like you fitting a piece into the inlay or like you holding a router over it? That's something that I've leaned into recently is like the close-up shots. They've worked really well for me. Yeah. But
no, I don't, but I mean, I think I could do one of two things here. This is gone. Either I can recreate that just because it's a tight shot. So if I just have a piece of walnut and I put a router on there and I do a line, then a tight shot, you're not going to know that it's not this.
No.
Yep.
So there's that. Or I'm thinking you lean into the goofy aspect of it a little bit and you take a tight shot of the inlay complete.
Yeah.
Put that up, filling the screen, most of it. And then a shot of me from like this angle, right? Holding up like a magnifying glass, looking at it.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love those ideas.
So, Jared, can you show me the layers on this photo?
Yeah. Where'd they go?
Everybody at home listening, we're taking a look at his Photoshop, which I know is really getting in the weeds for some people with how we make thumbnails and titles. But this is what we mean. Like, you make a video, you don't just slap whatever on it. Like, if you want the video to go well, you have to put some time and effort into this.
So see the layer labeled background?
Yep.
Actually, or sorry, no, the one above it, the picture. So that is your main picture, right? Yeah, hit the I to toggle it off. Okay, so now go and down at the bottom, create a new layer. And place it between everything else and that background layer. Yeah, right there.
You're going to put it like a Gaussian blur on it or something?
Something like I even just do move that down one. Yeah, right there. Yeah.
Like so opacity?
Turn on the visibility of the background layer again. And now on that new layer, grab like, I don't know, grab the paint bucket and just throw like a solid color down.
All right, where's paint bucket at?
Yeah, left side. It's under one of those tools. You gotta right click it, I think.
And I don't know how the heck you make a solid. This shows how bad I am at Photoshop. I know Photoshop. Just enough to get.
But what you're trying to get at, Zach, is first you paint like a layer of blue, and then you change the opacity to like 25%. So now it makes the whole background like a bluish tint is kind of what you're getting at.
The effect of it is that you knock out the background because that's useless information. People don't need that. And when you condense down to a very small version, that detail in the background kind of just becomes noise and it's distracting. Right. So you want to create the simplest one possible. So yeah.
See, I never know how to do it, but it'll be, I don't, something we can mess around with, but
yeah, I guess this is not, oh, there we go. Okay.
There's so a there's black anything, one.
Make it anything other than black.
Let's
make it blue. Come like on. Eric was saying.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there we go. And I think you put the opacity too low. Yeah. Bring that back to like 90% or something. Oh, there's something weird going on with the.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a black and white filter on it.
Oh.
Oh, I see. There you go.
They're like that.
you've immediately separated yourself from the background, and you've created a much more visually simple image. It's much easier for people to process. I would take the opacity like to like 80 or 90%. I like to leave it in the background just a little bit to show you like, yeah, it's in a workshop if you're really looking at it, but it honestly doesn't even matter. And what I found with doing it this way is it really frees me up to just make things out of whole cloth. I'm not so concerned about trying to get the perfect photo for a thumbnail. Like, you know, say you want to get a picture of the dartboard, you want to get a picture of you, and you want to get like one other detail in there. If you were trying to take a photo of those three things, you'd be constantly worried like, oh, am I in frame right? Is the dartboard the right size relative to me? When you start working with a background like this, you can take a photo of your dartboard, you can take a photo of you, and then you can just resize them as necessary and place them wherever you want on the screen.
So like already, so what we've done, we've changed the background to blue. Derek's face is still on it. And now we're zooming in like crazy on this inlay. Already, it's more interesting. It's more intriguing because I'm like, oh, okay, I can see the detail of what we're going to be talking about. And then if you paired that thumbnail with a title that also draws the intrigue, like I didn't think this was possible with a router. Now I can see this detail and I'm like, oh, he did that by hand. He didn't use a CNC. Like, okay, I'm curious.
I would say, Derek, take the inlay and so use the rule of thirds. Have you ever heard of the rule of thirds where you have like imported elements positioned at the third mark? So your face is on one third line. And then, I would have the inlay right on the other one.
So about there.
Yeah, something like that. Just so there's a little space between you and the inlay. And
And also know that Zach and I are sharing for everybody at home. Zach and I are sharing things that we have found that worked well.
Yeah.
There could be other people that have tried some of these strategies that we use and just failed miserably. Or one of the things that I always say, like for me, faces on my thumbnails do horribly. However, there are other people that have a face on every single thumbnail and the videos are incredible. So like we can give you suggestions, but at the end of the day, it's 100% up to you to, go your own way. The suggestions that we're giving are more broad statements, like create a title that draws intrigue to a video, right?
Yeah.
Universal. Everybody agrees you have to have that.
Yeah. I had something to say. Now I've completely forgotten.
Was it that the green suitors are so bad they make Odie's oil seem half decent? Because that's what Dadu has to say.
Oh, well, I was going to say, Eric and I will do something like this. We'll sit there, we'll really drill down on one thing, and then we'll put it up and it'll suck, and it won't perform well.
Yeah.
And
like my last few videos.
and you just accept that, and you go back to the drawing board.
Right.
And you try and come up with a new combination of title, and it's like, you just kind of have like this guesses, and it's just about trying to take like the best couple guesses up front.
Right.
That's the main thing.
And this is why we get into the A/B testing and why we're obsessed with it. Because Derek, how much time have you sank into making this thumbnail now for this one video? Like a couple hours?
Couple hours, yeah.
Right. So if you put up the video and it doesn't do well, you're gonna be like, well, what the hell?
Yeah.
Should I change the title? Should I change the thumbnail? Well, you can. You can run statistical tests on it and figure out which is better. That's how we get sucked into running these A/B tests, because you're like, I put so much damn time into making this project, editing the video, making the title and thumbnail. I want this thing to take off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And even if a video is performing pretty well already, there's always room for improvement. Mm-hmm. Like not my latest video, but my one before that, it was doing pretty well. And then I put a new title and thumbnail and I A/B tested it with the TubeBuddy software. And it was like, oh, the variation has a 25% higher click-through rate than the original one. And I see immediately a big bump in the viewership of that video. And then I did it again. And I had another, and then again, it was like, there's a, this is a 25% increase in the click-through rate versus the old one. And again, another bump in the viewership of that video.
Yeah. I spend a couple hours every single week A-B testing videos. And once it's complete, I'm like, okay, has the video taken off yet? No. Okay. I'm going to let it sit for a week and I'm going to come back to this one. Has it taken off yet? No. Okay. I'm going to do another A-B test. It's exhausting, but I have gotten videos that had under 1,000 views for multiple years. And I have them over 1 million views now by doing stuff like that, which is insanity to revive a video that's 2-3 years old. Title and thumbnail. Okay. I didn't change the video. Video's the same.
I've had so much more success with editing thumbnails and titles than I have with editing videos.
Oh yeah.
Like we've talked about going in and like removing sponsor spots and stuff like that from old videos, and it's never really made my videos perform that much better.
No.
But yeah, messing around with title and thumbnail. Even videos that I have from the past that have performed really well, I've been going back lately, and it's like, okay, how can I simplify this and make it like a little easier to see from a distance and blah, blah, blah. Like just small little tweaks. Because even if it just gets you 10% more clicks than the old version did, that can be the difference between a 10,000 view video and a 50,000 view video.
Right, right. The other thing that I've found is, we'll say this and then we'll head over to the after
show. Yeah, we're a little over time. Yeah.
That's all right. This is what everybody's paying for, the free the free main show. If you're like, a lot of people are tempted, and I did it, and I know a lot of other folks that did it, they'll post on like Instagram, be like, hey, which thumbnail do you like better?
No, I'll never listen to
it. It is always the inverse. So if people like choose A, B is the better thumbnail.
Yes.
People don't know what they like.
Yes.
Henry Ford doesn't make any sense.
He said, if I asked people what they wanted, they would have told me that they wanted faster horses.
Oh. Or they would have wanted the Green Series podcast to go to hell. Available.
And then we filled the market with our superior podcast.
The interesting point of all this that I find, the point that I find interesting out of all this is the focus on title and thumbnail, where description
irrelevant
matters is irrelevant. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and I was saying, so much room for it.
I was saying to Derek before the show started, I used to do paragraph video descriptions for everything. Like, oh, this project meant so much to me. I faced these challenges. I was inspired by this. I was inspired by that. Right. Now, scrap all that. It's usually a one sentence little thing. It's,
oh, I just like put in the sponsor they give you the thing. And then
it's like wherever they give you the smallest area.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's where the most impact comes from.
So YouTube knows every single word in your video. Have you ever clicked on a video and then it says show transcript?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not typing in a transcript. YouTube knows every single word. They know what your video is about.
I do give it a transcript.
What?
Because Premiere Pro has a thing that auto-generates transcripts for you. So it listens to your video and then does it. Because I found the YouTube one would always screw up, and then I had people complain.
Hmm. That's what you just say. I don't run a whole production company. I can't write out subtitles for these
videos. Well, AI, instead of hiring a transcriber, it just takes like 10 seconds to compute on my computer and then shoots me out a little file that I upload along with the video.
Final Cut Pro needs to get on this and start adding some helpful features like captions and videos and stuff like that. But that's a whole nother
I talk a lot of trash about Adobe, but they've been pretty good about implementing new features. I just need their programs to be a little bit more stable.
Unlike the Green Suiters podcast, available on Apple and Spotify. You know, we're going to get to that episode 100 that they said we were never going to get to.
I know.
Around the corner.
Prove them wrong.
But before we get to episode 100, we have to get to the episode 85 after show.
That's right.
Which I want to start it off by talking about the conversation I had with JCats and why I'm really excited. Okay. But if you want to hear about that, you got to quit being a freeloader. Head over to the after show. Or just wait till next week. That's fine, too. No pressure. Just whatever you do, don't listen to the Green Sears podcast on all streaming platforms.
wherever fine podcasts can be found.
Well, not there. All right. We'll see you next week.
See you, everybody.